Welcome to White Shores, the podcast for spiritual beings having a human experience. Let me invite you to walk once more beside me on White Shores to talk about the real meaning of life and the true power of what is unseen. Let's discuss dreams, intuition, manifesting, as above, so below, angels, afterlife, the science of consciousness, and other infinite possibilities within and all around you. I hope every episode informs, inspires, and illuminates. So, now the scene is set. Allow the grey rain curtain of this world to roll back and all to turn to silver glass. Let's walk barefoot together on the gentle, glistening sands of White Shores to see what mystery lies beyond the material. Thank you for arriving safely on White Shores and beyond, a far green country under a swift sunrise. Can any of you movie lovers out there guess where that atmospheric music came from? The clue is in the title of this week's episode. Of course, it is the theme from that brilliantly clever movie Sixth Sense, starring Bruce Willis. The ending of that movie is sublime. I won't give it away if you're one of the very few people who haven't watched it already, but the ending is breathtaking and unforgettable. As breakthrough as Sixth Sense the movie was, and still is, it hasn't really helped clear up confusion surrounding that term Sixth Sense. Most people still think of Sixth Sense as the ability to see dead people, spirits and apparitions not of this earthly realm. But the truth of the matter is that although Sixth Sense can encompass mediumship if you decide to develop that ability, it is actually the collective power of your other five physical senses of sight, sound, touch, hearing, taste, and smell. It is your intuitive power, your inner psychic, the deeply spiritual part of you that can connect you to everyone and everything in spirit and in the process awaken your soul. All of us have Sixth Sense, a longing to connect with our own soul in our DNA, as research shows that. And my special guest today is someone highly qualified to advise and discuss how you can empower that connection to your own soul, how you can awaken spiritually. He is a repeat offender on White Shores, and for good reason, as he has dedicated his life to empowering both individuals and collectives to realize their own intuitive, psychic, and spiritual potentials. His name is Charlie Castex, and he has been named as one of the top 50 psychics in the USA. For the last 30 years, Charlie has paired his outstanding intuitive and psychic abilities with his passion for spiritual teaching. And as you will hear in his upcoming interview, he goes right to the heart of the matter in such an authentic, down-to-earth and practical manner. He also defies the stereotype of the so-called psychic. Here is an extract from a New York Times opinion piece written about him, and you can find that piece online if you search it. In the piece, the journalist asked Charlie if he should call him a psychic. I'm going to quote from this piece now. Quote, "Is that the politically correct term?" Charlie shrugs. "You can call me psychic if you want," he says. "That's the generally accepted term. But Sixth Sense counsellor is a more accurate depiction of the job. Psychic conjures up those images of crystal balls and dark rooms. I find all that repulsive. I mean, that sort of thing is right up there with the oldest profession. The journalist goes on to say, he's delightfully candid, his blue eyes clear. Unquote. In addition to the New York Times opinion piece, he has been featured on HuffPost, ABC, NBC, among others. I'm sensing you are going to enjoy his upcoming interview. Do stay tuned afterwards if you can, as I will share a simple exercise you can do anytime, anywhere to connect to your own inner psychic, to your soul, really. But for now, it's high time for your Sixth Sense counsellor, Charlie Castex, to step into the spotlight. Let's roll the tape. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Teresa. Wonderful to be here with you. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a while since we've spoken, but I remember last time it was just such a wonderful experience talking to you, and I got some lovely messages. So thank you.
Thank you
for being here. But for people who haven't listened to that first interview, please, could you just give a brief introduction to who you are?
Sure, absolutely. Well, it's my pleasure to be here with you, Teresa. And my journey began close to three decades ago as a very young boy. And it's a fairly long story, so I'll give it in just a sound bite that when I was around 10 years old, I made a proclamation, a really strong assertion that it was time to get serious about my spiritual life. And that brought me on quite a journey of 10 years of apprenticeship with a Native American medicine man, and as well as a Native American holy man spiritual leader. And over that time, over the last 28 years, I've been guiding souls around the world with a combination of clairvoyant guidance and what I love to call conscious counseling or spiritual coaching. So it's been a profound journey of guiding people. And it's amazing. I get to really live an incredible dream of empowering other people.
And I'm sure that they're very fortunate to be working with you and to encounter you as well, Charlie. It's wonderful, actually. A mark of a real spiritual teacher is often their humility, and that comes across with you so much. But to go back, you said you experienced profound spiritual insights way back when you were 10 years of age. Could you just elaborate a bit more on that?
Sure. It's the kind of thing that's fairly ineffable, though. It's fairly difficult to describe. But I can say, for instance, that the sense of the sacred was very palpable for me. As both an altar boy and as a child, I would enact masses in my room and play with holy water and this kind of thing. But the sense of the sacred was very palpable, very tangible for me. And I was connected to grace and guidance in my dreams as a child. And actually, my spiritual journey there in terms of the conscious beginnings of that journey coincided with the death of my father. So I was, as one might imagine, as a little boy, very, completely devastated and really, really lost. And so I kind of turned to the spirit and turned to divinity, and I found that it was really responding. And so much so that in my dreams, for instance, as a child, I would see for quite some time, I would have these lucid dreams with my father in a schoolroom. And he would be the only person sitting at one of the desks. And I'd sit there with him, and I was so emotional and so touched. And I'd ask him every question I could conceive of in terms of what was happening in my life and my family and a very difficult, abusive home that I grew up in. And he would answer all those questions. And I also had spiritual experiences where, which would be somewhat on parallel for people which are familiar with the lexicon of the Akashic records, or angelic guidance was given to me also in my dreams as a child. And that was not only a source of solace, but it was a source of awakening. It was a source of realization that the divinity that I felt so attracted to was not only all around me, it was within me. So that's an example, a profound example of where I was starting on that journey.
Was your family deeply spiritual? Was there a mystical tradition within your family, or was this something that was kind of unique to you?
That's a great question. The answer is yes. Yes, actually, more from the, if you would like to draw a distinction between religious and spiritual, I would say more from the religious perspective, but of course, that's where does one end and the other begin. My mother was so spiritual that she actually dedicated all three of us, my two sisters and myself, to patron saints. And when she found out she was having me, she dedicated me to Saint Michael, which I found really interesting. And that's my middle name. And of course, in the beautiful mythic description of Saint Michael, he was basically slaying the dragons or casting out the darkness. So I absolutely, my mother was deep into prayer, and my grandmother, and my first aspirations as a child around that time that I mentioned, when I was, it started around 8, and by 10, I was really getting deep into this exploration of the spirit. And I remember I just wanted to be a priest. I thought that was the only reference point. So for quite some time, I considered being either a priest or a scientist because I wanted to know how everything worked, and I was insatiably curious. But yes, my family was spiritual and religious within like within the holy, I'd say, atmosphere of Catholicism.
Fascinating. But the trigger, the catalyst, I guess, was the death of your father. And in a way, you could say that much of your life has been trying to process that, really, if you look at it in that way, you know, from a psychological aspect. But I love the fact that you referenced afterlife dreams. Can you talk a bit more about afterlife dreams? Because, you know, I get messaged so much about that. Are they afterlife signs?
Well, it's a fascinating subject. I often wonder, though, because there's so many ways we can interpret this, what your definition of the afterlife dreams would be, so to make sure that I'm having the same reference point.
Yeah. You want my definition?
Sure, because I want to make sure I'm referencing the right thing. I know that the...
Okay, I see what you mean. Basically, the idea that our consciousness or a spark or something, our spirit, our soul, lives on after bodily death. That's what I'm talking about, that in right. our dream state, that we can potentially connect with departed loved ones.
Yes, sure. I always like to make sure for clarity. Yes, absolutely. In fact, I have a beautiful recollection of my maternal grandmother coming to me in when she died, and I wasn't aware of it consciously, but I had this fantastic dream where she showed up, and it was really like the cliche image, but certainly super beatific and super impactful, because she was coming in this white flowing robes, and there was light all around her body. And she told me she loved me. And then that same morning when I woke up, I knew I'd been visited by her, that it wasn't just a subconscious experience. Then my aunt called me and said, you know, Nanny has died. And I said, I know, she came to me last night. And it was so beautiful because she said, well, out of all of us, the fact that she came to you means so much, because you know, she admired my interest in the divine. So it's a fascinating aspect of life, that the love is the continuity. And I think the physical material world, although it is absolutely relatively real, as quantum physics asserts, it's really a manifestation of condensed energy and frequency that is operating at a more dense scale. And of course, in this dream plane and within transcendent experiences, we not only pierce the veil, I don't think there really is a veil.
the gratitude for highlighting afterlife dreams, because I don't think there's enough conversation about them, and not enough people talk about them as the sort of, like, it is a kind of a gentle connection, isn't it? Because people say it's just a dream. Mm. But for anyone who's had this kind of meeting in a dream with a departed loved one, they will know different. What do you say to people, though, who long for an afterlife dream or an afterlife sign, but they don't feel they are getting it? What right. would you say to them to comfort them?
Sure. That's an excellent question. I believe that the best place to start is to create a state of receptivity, a state of listening, because the act of receiving guidance begins with listening. So no matter what's being transmitted in the universe and what kind of signs or intuitions that are coming externally or internally, our ability to perceive and receive information is contingent upon our receptivity. So to create receptivity, it's actually quite simple. It may not be easy, but it's certainly simple, which is to get good at quieting, to get good at being able to center oneself. And in more of a physiological sense, what would that mean? We can see it reflected in neuroscience and, again, in physiological science, but that means getting the brain coherent. It often suggests lowering the brainwaves or slowing the brainwaves, rather, from a high beta brainwave state, the busy, busy doing state, to more of an alpha state as a starter, a relaxed presence where you're awake and very relaxed and very much at ease. And that state of relaxation and receptivity allows us to pick up the information much more easily. So a lot of times I think people are really kind of running very fast in any direction, and they're so consumed with the sense of doing and striving and achieving and aspiring, and all of that's great. But I think the most empowering platform is to be seated in your experience and to be connected to your beingness, which is to say, to do from a state of being versus being from a state of doing, because after all, we're human beings. So we get connected to being, seated into being, becoming receptive, then we're likely to pick up much more information, especially in the dream plane. And you can also, if I may add, before you go to sleep, how you stage your sleeping experience, I think, can also be conducive to receiving these beautiful afterlife dreams, in terms of setting an intention or having prayer or meditation, especially before sleep.
Thank you for that, because it's so important, those precious moments just before sleeping, isn't it? Because we're kind of, what we focus on then really filters deep into our unconscious.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And influences our dreams, and our dreams, as you know, and well, I firmly believe, influence our waking life and vice versa. You know, we don't stop being ourselves in the dream state. We just go into an alternate
right.
a reality, don't we? It's still us, but we experience ourselves in a kind of a symbolic, mystical way, which we've got to learn to understand. But that's a dream work. And thank you for allowing me to talk about dream work. It's just that you talked about your afterlife dreams of your father, and that felt like a moment to sort of really talk about afterlife dreams in a way I haven't actually had a chance to do as much as I would like on this podcast. So thank you, Charlie. But to go back to your story, so then you're this young man with this clear desire to devote yourself to a spiritual calling. You thought it was through the conventional priest religious way, but then, like many people, you realize that you're spiritual without necessarily being religious. That's the sense I'm getting.
Correct.
And then you go and get your inspiration from a medicine man, Sun Bear.
Right.
When did this happen? And can you please tell me what kind of inspiration that was?
Sure, absolutely. So my connection with Sun Bear started when I was 18, actually. So a few years past my beginnings of questing. And the initial connection was somewhat of a mutual screening process, where Sun Bear was open to students approaching him, and there would be a lot of discussion. There was a 10-day apprenticeship screening program at the time, where you lived on the mountain and with his bear tribe. And the inspiration that evolved out of that experience? Well, first of all, and I love your perspective of seeing the kind of meta-psychology behind, for instance, the quest that sometimes propels us towards divinity and towards wanting to experience the divine is often from a dark night of the soul. So in that respect, there was a huge sublimation or a kind of unconscious quest for fathering from Sun Bear, naturally. Although I wasn't very conscious of it, of course, I was wanting to be protected and guided and supported, and that is what happened. But at the same time, Sun Bear was very, I would say, adamant about not wanting to entertain any philosophy or any belief system that, in his words, did not grow corn, meaning it didn't bear fruit. So there's an incredible pragmatism to him, and he expected that the students, no matter how young we were very responsible to our own state of being, that we were responsible for our efforts, and basically he wanted to see that this was tangible, that it wasn't just philosophical. So the great takeaway, well, there's so many, but I can say that out of the experience of both of the Native American elders in this 10 years of fantastic apprenticeship, which is just still mind-blowing to me that that actually happened in my life, is a very simple but profound kind of formula. I've just kind of chalked it up to, okay, out of everything I've learned in all of those hours in sacred ceremonies, et cetera, is that there's an alchemical formula that's greater than the sum of its parts. And what I'm suggesting is that there's three aspects that, if dovetailed together, if put together, create an empowerment, or in the Native American parlance, you can make medicine, you can affect profound change, you can align with the divine and influence your personal reality and perhaps the objective reality around you. So the three aspects are sincerity, focus, and intention. Simple enough. And the sincerity is obviously authenticity. The intention is the coordinate that our entire beings follow. Whenever we set an intention, we're basically having an agenda. And an agenda is a motive. And like all heroes mythically, and certainly in the modern world, when we are entertained by superheroes and superhero ethos, well, every superhero has a motive and a superpower. So the motive is your intention. And if you get that very powerfully set, very powerfully seated, where you're living from the inside out deeply from this intention, then the next step is the superpower, which is your attention, the outward going focus. And that's what's going to allow the intention and the attention, or the twin wings that allow you to fly, basically. So the combination of sincerity, intention, and attention is, interestingly, the great takeaway, because that has, well, that combination or formula, if you will, allows people to take their power back. And they're not necessarily feeling like, you know, the world has to give it to them, or that spirit has to give them this, that, or the other. Nothing wrong with that. But I think it really puts the power back in our hands and in our hearts, where we set the course. In other words, our intention is our, well, let me say it another way, rather. Your destiny is always relative or equal to your intention. You'll notice that your destiny can't be any other than your intention. The outcome of your intention is your destiny.
Beautifully put. Thank you. Ooh. Thank you for that. You're talking really about, I guess, the inside out approach, instead of looking to the world to fulfill you. You mm-hmm. you set kind of, you know, through your mindset and through your inside out approach, you make the choices to attract the life that you want. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, yes, it is. It is, because every religious path and spiritual path included. All paths of higher thought, personal growth, and transformation really center on this truth that the divine is within us, right? That seems to be the kind of essence of the perennial philosophy. And so if that's the case, then it's so beautiful and so freeing because we realize, okay, that which we're looking for is inside of ourselves. When we find it within ourselves, then we find it without. We find it elsewhere. So it's tremendously powerful that way. And if the divine is within us, then the way I see it is the way I'm thinking, the way I'm feeling, and the way I'm acting, those three dimensions of the human experience are what defines my state of being. And no one can do that for me. It's so interesting. People can provoke thought, and they can incite emotion, and maybe incite you to action. But there's always this autonomy. That's the grace of the individuality from which we're bestowed. Is that how you're thinking and feeling and acting is the most sacred territory of the individual. And when we claim the responsibility associated with that power, then all of a sudden that power is authenticated because we realize, oh, okay, I'm the one who, we shifted out of a paradigm of obligation in terms of, oh, I've got to be empowered or I've got to meditate or I've got to do all this spiritual work. No, you shifted out of obligation into the paradigm of opportunity, and you look at it as I get to. It's not that I've got to, I get to. So you get to be somebody, you get to be a person, you get to be an individual. And I love how it just collapses so much of the friction that people have about the ego and their minds and this and that. If you see that how you're thinking, feeling, and acting is the most sacred aspect, then you can really enjoy the dance of your human experience.
It's also wildly liberating and exciting when you realize that it, you know, it's always has been within you, and you start, you know, that there's that saying, isn't it, that when X, Y, and Z work out in my waking life, then I will be happy. But, you know, the spiritual path is when I feel happy within me and at peace, then the outside world will fall into place. And for many of us, isn't it? It takes a while to understand that. And I think you have to live it, you know, because I think when people are younger, they're still kind of programmed to the way of getting their satisfaction from material accomplishments. And it's a process, isn't it? And some people come to it younger. You clearly came to it at a very young age. But for some of us, myself included, it can take a couple of decades, if not more, to get that.
And that's fine. I absolutely concur. And I feel like it's really fine because it's certainly not a race, obviously. And what we're looking for is right here. So it's not somewhere else. It's just a matter of the other day when I was doing a teaching program, what we call a Words of Wisdom event. It was so nice because it really flashed before me that to remind both myself and the beautiful people in the audience that it's not something that we're trying to achieve so much as the realization or the self-empowerment is a remembrance. It's a remembrance of how it is. It's a homecoming, not so much an attainment. And if we take it from that kind of perspective, then I think we won't run right past it.
Thank you. And this takes me to the question I was naturally going to ask you, that what you do now is very much not people coming to sit at your feet, as it were, and follow you, but you, what they may think they're coming for that, oh, I've got this person who's going to tell me everything, but what you're actually doing, and this is what I admire so much about you, and it's become clear in this interview again, as it was in the first, that you are about giving people the tools to empower themselves. And move forward with their lives with a feeling of peace and confidence that they may not have had before.
Thank you.
So let's talk about this work. And again, what's fascinating about you is you have your foot in both worlds. You've worked as an advisor for Fortune 500 companies, entertainment industry executives, as well as working with holistic health and healing and people who are seeking spiritual and psychic guidance. So you're kind of like... I always think that We've got to balance the material with the intuitive, haven't we, for peace?
Yes.
And one shouldn't tilt towards the, I mean, you can't deny the material, the existence of that, because we're here on this earth for a reason, aren't we? Sometimes people in this movement, they go too away with the fairies, as it were.
Right. Yes.
Working with Fortune 500 companies, bringing in this message, go you, that's brilliant. Could you tell us a bit more about that kind of work that you do with businesses and industry executives?
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, it's very rich, Teresa. It's really a beautiful subject to explore what you're saying in terms of the physical and the spiritual, just starting there, because my perspective more and more, I mean, just by the second, is that the physical and the spiritual, first of all, are not diametrically opposed. They're not polarized in any way. We can insist on that, which I think is kind of conjuring an illusion. So we're welcome to it. But really, my reality informs me that the physical and the spiritual are two sides of the same coin. It's the same thing, with two different aspects of how it plays out. So specifically, in terms of people with the Fortune 500 companies, executives, particularly in these corporate environments, what's so curious about it is it really isn't much different than the guidance that I'm able to give people on an individual level, because there's always individuals involved in those large corporate entities that are seeking the guidance or support, more so than writing a software program for them or something. I'm not doing that, but the people are coming to me with their genuine concerns. And yes, if they're financial, then especially in years prior, I would give my best at discerning outcomes or helping them problem solve from an intuitive or clairvoyant basis. But always with, always with the view of how it can really serve the greatest good for them. You know, it's important that we're awake to this experience in terms of being as aware as we can be that we're in the midst of a miracle. See, the real tragedy would be to go through our lives and be just kind of racing to the end and miss everything that's there. So my view has always been towards, okay, well, you know, we can problem solve, we can look towards prosperity, absolutely. But for instance, like, let me take it out of the abstract for you. With every person that I consciously counsel or I work with in my spiritual coaching bundles that I do, and that's an international offering, it's there for everybody, is a very firm recommendation, a very firm endorsement that they make sure that they're enjoying the path, that they're enjoying their empowerment. Because if you're not enjoying it, then what's the point? So with both the individual and these corporations that I've been blessed to work with, they like that because they know I mean business with it. It's like, okay, if you're going to investigate how to be more profitable, great. But make sure you're coming to it from a sense of play, a sense of joy, or what I like to term original bliss. Because when we come onto the planet, nobody needs to teach us how to play. Nobody needs to teach us how to laugh or how to smile. Everything else needs to be taught, you know, how to use the toilet, how to tie our shoes, how to even eat. But how to play, how to laugh and smile is so, that's the factory installed equipment. That's our original bliss. So I usually try to see those opportunities that are seemingly financial and very worldly and physical and all that. And that's fine. But I see it as an opportunity to not just superimpose consciousness, but to say, well, how much consciousness can we bring to that? How much joy can we bring to that? Understanding that if you really prosper, then what it allows you to do is serve people on a higher level. And that's the beauty of it, because nature's agenda, speaking of motives and agendas, seems to me to be about cooperation, not competition.
I'd love to
go from that direction if possible. You know, well, I do it whether it's possible or not.
You're talking about the inner wealth here, aren't you? In such a beautiful way. Thank you, Charlie. Mm. And at the moment, you know, you are truly global, aren't you? You do events and coaching and consultations. And big events. Would you talk about those, the ones that you do? I can see that you're doing events.
Yeah, absolutely. We just did a Words of Wisdom event here in North Carolina in the southeastern United States, where we are mainly located. And yes, it's a beautiful kind of forum where there's spiritual teaching. There's a teaching, a wisdom teaching, and then there's time for questions for people. And that was the recent event. And it is based in a kind of DIY spirituality, or what I like to think of as soulcraft, where you get the tools to empower yourself. And now that begins with self-regulation. And it sounds a little bit dry, but believe me, it's very juicy in the sense of when you're able to, if we could define self-regulation as the artful management of your thoughts and emotions, just think about it. If you're feeling balanced, you're feeling happy, you're feeling centered, and you're stable in your psychology, then you can get happy. And then if you take it further with your life force energies, with the spiritual dimension, the intuitive dimension of yourself, then you start to go towards bliss. Then you start to go towards ecstasy. So there's a practicality to becoming balanced, because you can't substitute crazy for clarity. So we really focus on that aspect of self-regulation, which is really joyful. Once you get involved with it, it's like, wow, you see how fast your life changes. And I'm really just one voice in the choir, by the way, about that. There's so many people that are connected to this within human potential realm that are working with self-regulation. So that's a big part of it, self-regulation before the self-realization. And for years now, I've been doing, everything from week-long cruises in the Caribbean to a spiritual retreat in Italy, week-long in Italy. We have different types of programs that are based in either intuitive development or spiritual empowerment.
And as you would expect from one of America's top 50 psychics, that's a wonderful accolade. And I'm reading all the glowing endorsements on your website as well. And I love that you've closed this interview reminding listeners of White Shores that you do tend, I say it's not a rule, an absolute rule, because of course there are always exceptions in life. Life is a mystery. You can't sort and order it that way, but you tend to attract what you are, how you're feeling inside. So working on that inner growth and healing is the most important quest and journey of your life. It's not selfish at all, because you're less of a drain to others, aren't you? If you are working on your own healing and, you know, not draining them, you're empowering them. And that's what Charlie Castax does. He helps you learn how to empower yourself from the inside out. So if people wanted to have a session with you or to follow you or read your book, we haven't even mentioned that. You have to come on again, Charlie. There's so much. Okay. Read your book or whatever. What is the best portal?
Sure. CharlieCastex.com. Our website is really the most direct way to find me. And so it's Charlie, I spell L-E-Y, kind of an old world spelling. So it's CharlieCastex. So CharlieCastex.com is the easiest place to find me. I am on social media, but this is just that's more direct. You can kind of see what I'm doing as far as the consultations and the workshops and events.
Well, it's quite a distinctive name, so I'm sure it's very easy if people go online and search. And just like to give people a few images or words or themes when people are searching you out that can help, because they can only hear your voice. As I always say, you can tell a lot from a person's voice. But so I'm going to ask you three questions that maybe help people. If you could be an animal, what would it be and why?
Oh, wow. Such a good question. It's an odd question, but it's beautiful because it's such, how can we even begin with that one? I love animals so much.
But if on the other side they said, you're going back as an animal, choose, what would you choose?
right. Yeah. In just a second, without being able to give it much thought, I might say a whale, because there's something obviously just divine and precious about these ancient beings that are in some sense.
Love that, because if people dream of Wales, it's such a spiritual symbol. Thank you. Mm. Next question. If you could be a colour, what would it be and why?
Okay. Well, I would have to say probably somewhere in the upper purple spectrum, you know, in the gorgeous lavenders kind of light. I think because it's just a gorgeous, it's a gorgeous, you know, like spectrum on the light spectrum. It's just a beautiful, attractive tone.
Thank you. And your final question, if you could be a song or a piece of music, what would it be and why?
A song or a piece of music.
A song that you love. So people can hear in their head.
Yeah. As a musician, that is a trick question. Gosh.
I know there's so much beautiful music out there. It's hard to find one. But one right now, and that may well change, you know, in tomorrow you might feel something different. But right now, if you could be a song.
Okay. Well, maybe like music. Maybe like a classical version of Amazing Grace.
Gorgeous. I love that. And a final thing, is there a movie or TV show that you could recommend listeners of White Shores that you feel, you know, has a good spiritual empowering message? Because so many of us watch things online.
Well, and it's interesting because I might have recommended this last time, but there's a...
No harm recommending it again.
Okay, right. There's a beautiful show called Inner Worlds, Outer Worlds, that I think is both on YouTube and I believe it's on Gaia Television too, that connects with spirituality and empowerment and kind of the big picture in terms of human potential to connect with the divine and the divine within us.
That's absolutely perfect, Charlie. Thank you from my heart and soul for sharing your precious time with listeners of White Shores and myself today.
Thank you, Teresa. Such a pleasure. Absolutely. Such a pleasure to be with you and a real joy.
Hope you found that interview informative and illuminating. And if you did, that you will seek Charlie out. Details are in the show notes. Now, at the start of this episode, I said I would share a very simple way for you to cross the line from the physical world to the psychic world. So here goes. The psychic world is dominated by your five senses of sight, hearing, smell, sound, and touch. In this familiar world, you rely entirely on your five senses for finding things out. Eyes, nose, mouth, ears, and skin all give you news about what is happening to you. Stop right now and really look around. Or listen to the sounds, look at the sights, smell the air. The manifold richness of life is all around you, continually flooding into you through your body's senses. Many of us take our five senses for granted, but it is only when we become more aware of them that we can start to tell when we are getting information without using those five physical senses. So, what is on the other side, the psychic side? The answer is simple. It starts, well, the door to that side, the psychic side, is your thoughts. Feeling, hearing, and seeing your thoughts is the beginning of psychic development. Try looking at it like this. Thoughts come from the world of the senses, but they can carry you over to the world beyond your senses. For example, you can imagine being at home or at work without actually being there, just as you can imagine someone you love without the need for their immediate physical presence. This is because you can feel and listen to your thoughts, and your thoughts can transcend time and place. Your thoughts may be about the material physical world or what is happening outside you, but they take place inside you. Simply recognizing this distinction is the beginning of psychic awakening, an awareness of a world inside your head, behind your eyes, that is quite different from the physical world in which you live and work. This is the world where your psychic power will start to reveal itself. From now on, if you aren't already doing so, start seeing the world through your psychic eyes. It might help to start by acting as an observer of your own life. Step outside yourself every now and again and take a look at what you are thinking, feeling, saying, and doing. Don't criticize or judge, just observe. Now, this might sound a bit crazy, but it is a well-known technique for improving self-awareness and awakening psychically. Watching yourself can really help you separate what you think and feel from who you are. You will see that throughout the day, your thoughts and feelings constantly flow through you, and that powerful though these thoughts and feelings are, they are separate from you. You are the one who allows yourself to experience them. You are the one in charge. So that's a very simple technique you can use anytime during the day when it's safe to do so. And of course, another way to connect to your inner psychic, your sixth sense, your intuition, is to start recalling and writing down your dreams, those symbolic dramas that play out behind your eyes every night when you fall asleep. And each one of them has precious insight to offer you. Don't let them slip away. I cover all the ways you can harness your sixth sense in my recent title, Empower Your Inner Psychic, published by HarperCollins in 2023. Whether you read that book or not, I truly hope after listening to this episode of White Shores, you will pay more attention to your inner psychic, because it is a fast pass to a whole new world of adventure and illumination. We have all had times when we see something nobody else sees, or sense something nobody else senses, or have a dream that comes true, an inspiration that arrives without prompting. These are the times when you have learned or discovered something without using your five physical senses. You can call it many things: intuition, clairvoyance, gut feeling, sixth sense, or your inner psychic. Better still, you might just want to call it me, the most authentic and infinitely wise and powerful version of amazing you. Thank you from my heart and soul for being here and walking beside me in spirit on White Shores. Sensitive, kind, compassionate souls like you who see beyond the material are needed more than ever today to help this earth heal and evolve. If you have any questions, stories, or insights to share, I absolutely love hearing from you and aim to reply to everyone in due course. My website is www.teresachung.com. My contact email is angeltalk710@aol.com. And you can message me via my Instagram handle, The Teresa Chung, as well as my Facebook and Twitter author pages. Until we meet again on these white shores, keep being amazing spiritual you, sending my eternal love and gratitude.